Hi, this is Dr. Paul White, a psychologist and co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. And I'm glad to have you join us today for this version of Making Work Relationships Work, where we talk about how to apply the five languages of appreciation to daily work life. And I'm really pleased to have John Rulin with me today as my guest. And John and I are just getting to know each other, but whenever we talk, we have a lot of fun. So I think it's going to be a fun time. John, I'm excited about having you with us today to talk about the five languages of appreciation. And as you know, we're probably going to spend a fair amount of time talking about the language of tangible gifts, because that's an area of expertise for you. So welcome. And why don't you just tell a little bit about yourself, your background, and both personally and in sort of early business life, and then we'll hear sort of about what you've been doing lately.
Yeah. Well, Paul, thanks for having me.
Sure.
This is an honor. It's super exciting for me. I'm a Midwest farm boy. I live in St. Louis area now, but I grew up in Ohio. Grew up on 47 acres, one of six kids, you know, milking goats every morning. Doing a lot of blue collar stuff. I didn't really like that very well, so I decided I was going to get straight A's all through school and go be a doctor.
Uh-huh.
But my life changed because I had a mentor. I'm 20 years old, going to Malone University, small Christian school there in Canton, Ohio. And I was undergrad, and I'm dating this girl, and her dad is the board of the trustees. He's an attorney. But when I met him and spent time with him, he like seemed to have his hand in everything. He was in, he owned oil wells and banks, and he was like, when you're poor and you grow up poor, you notice when people are generous. And he was just radically generous. He was always, he'd buy like all the raffle tickets for the school auction and win the Harley, you know, $30,000 bike, and then donate it back to the school. And I'm like, Paul, that was 30 grand. Like, we could have sold that on eBay. I would have, you know, like,
right.
It just boggled my mind. And so, out of desperation, I had started a business that, and I ended up getting physically hurt, almost dying. From falling off a ladder, and I was looking for something else to do. And I, out of desperation, I went interns with a company called Cutco, the knife company. And there, I didn't realize at the time, but they have like one of the best personal development and sales training programs on the planet. I was doing it to make money and kind of have some sales experience. And I remember pitching Paul. I thought, well, he gives all of his clients, you know, employees and all of his team gifts all the time. I'm thinking maybe he'll have mercy on me and buy some Cutco pocket knives for some of his clients and employees that are guys because they're into the outdoors. My life changed forever. He said, John, I don't want to order the pocket knives. Could I order a bunch of the paring knives? I'm like, Paul, you want to give a bunch of CEOs and employees that are like making a lot of money, like a bunch of guys, like a kitchen tool? Like, why? He changed my life forever. He said, John, in 40 years in business, I figured out one simple thing is that, and that's if you take care of the family in business, everything else seems to take care of itself. So for me, it was a lightning bolt moment. I started to apply these principles as I was working with people. And by the time I was a senior in college, Cutco has worked with about 1.5 million people over 70 years. They're like the Rolex of cutlery. And I became their number one all-time distributor out of 1.5 million people by the time I'm a senior in college. So I decided to put med school permanently on hold and really build a company around kind of a gifting done for you service to take care of employees, clients, and other relationships. And that was 19 years ago. And a lot's happened in those 19 years. But yeah, it started with kind of just, admiring and really looking at Paul at 60 and saying, I want to be Paul when I'm 60 years old. I want those kind of relationships. And a lot of what I teach to this day on stages all over the world, on Google and wherever else, are things I learned from an attorney in Ohio.
Interesting. And where's Cutco located? Their primary offices?
Their corporate office is up in New York. They're
okay.
Outside of Buffalo,
okay.
Actually.
Okay.
A little town of Olean. There's about 900 employees.
Okay.
The town, like the YMCA, is the Cutco YMCA, like.
Right.
They're some of the most kind and generous and thoughtful people that our entire agreement for 19 years has been on a handshake. Never a contract. Like, they're just those kind of old school, just salt of the earth kind of people there.
Yeah.
In Western New York.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I grew up in the context of a family owned business that my father and grandfather started and sort of lived through that and then had the opportunity to work around the country with very successful family-owned businesses and help them deal with wealth transfer issues and business succession issues. And one of the things that I observed along the way was that not all, but most of these people sort of did the right thing over a long period of time. It wasn't sort of this wham-bang, you know, big wealth event, and that they were just really committed to providing quality service, treating their customers well, treating their employees well, and dealing in integrity and honesty, even when it was hurtful to them. And we know some proverbs about that, that people, that men and women of their word, they fall through even when it's not to their own benefit. And it's interesting as you hear, we hear you talk about sort of the generosity and all that. It's, and I coming at this from, you know, the five languages of appreciation, and tangible gifts is one of those languages.
Yep.
And, you know, I think we're still sort of dialoguing and figuring out, okay, how do these sort of flow together and work together? I mean, there's some obvious ways. I mean, but there's also some background and sort of behind the scenes kind of thing, because, you know, appreciation and gratitude are closely tied together. They're not the exact same thing, because you can be grateful about just life circumstances or grateful to God. It's not about being appreciative to an individual. But there's then sort of a flow into generosity too. So this is a little bit off the cuff, but tell us a little bit what you've learned about generosity per se, not just generally. I mean, obviously there's some benefits to it, but as you've observed people who seem to be generous, what have you learned?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that there's a lot of people out there that feel grateful. And gratitude's powerful, but it's oftentimes self-focused. It's more focused on, you know, like you feel grateful, it helps the person who's feeling grateful. Mm-hmm. But what I saw in my original mentor, Paul, and the leaders that are really leading large teams of people or inspiring large amounts of clients, is that, you know, gratitude in action and, you know, putting your money where your mouth is, mm-hmm. is, you know, that generosity, that's what inspires people. Because, you know, it's easy to talk about or feel something. But when somebody sees that you're really willing to love on people and go the extra mile for them, and not just in, I mean, words are powerful, no question. Like, words of affirmation, ironically, are my love language. Gifting isn't. But as an introvert, you know, gifting gives me the words of affirmation back and then gets people to respond to me, because I'm actually naturally pretty shy, even though I speak all the time or whatever else. Like, that's not naturally how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. But I think that the generosity is where the outpouring of that gratitude and putting that into action is, I think that's like the next level of leadership. And that's where people are really drawn to and inspired by. And it's not easy, especially when you grow up poor, or mm-hmm. you're like, man, is this really going to work? Like, you're like, you know, how fast am I going to get a return on investment? Well, mm-hmm. you know, like, Paul wasn't worried about that. Like, he just did the right thing because he knew it was the right thing. And guess what? Over the course of 30 or 40 years, like, people would reach out to him 20 years later with a deal. Now, he never gave the gift or wrote the handwritten note or gave the words of affirmation to get that, but it came back to him 100x. Mm-hmm. But most people, like, everybody said that they're playing the long game, mm-hmm. but you can tell by their actions whether something, their strings attached or not. And I think that's where generosity and doing things the right way with no strings is, you know, people can tell your heart. Are you trying to manipulate the situation or not?
Right.
And be truly generous. And so I think that's where the rubber meets the road. And you know, as humans, we're pretty good at sniffing that out.
Right. Would you say, I mean, as I listen to you, it sort of strikes me that it seems like generosity is both an action and a heart attitude, right? Because you can do the act that looks generous. I mean, you're giving something, but your intent or motive is to get a return. And so you can have the action without really the heart. And sometimes people have the heart, maybe don't follow it up with the action, right? You know, it's like, I'm feeling really generous today. Come back tomorrow and see if it's still here tomorrow. But, you know, I don't know. It just seems that there's a combination of that, right? And that's...
No question.
Okay. So...
Yeah, we won't take on clients unless they have the heart.
Yeah.
If you're trying to manipulate things and just going for the short-term gain, like, yes, like in business, profit's not a bad word. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all in business to make profit. But when you can have a long-term view and give a gift with an open palm, mm-hmm. versus with strings or with a fist around it, and that's where people ruin the gifts. That's where they ruin the generosity, is is when you give a gift and you say, well, now what, where's my referral? Where's my deal? Where's my,
right.
You know, like, you better go run through walls for me as an employee. Like, that doesn't feel good to be manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no question. I think a lot of people, they don't realize it. Well, I'm just going to plug into this giftology system. I'm like, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have a, you know, are you a giver, a take? You know, it's like Adam Grant's book, you know, give and take. Like, are you a giver, taker, or matcher? Most people are matchers. A lot of gift takers out there. There's not a ton of givers.
Right.
Like, people want to talk a good game around it, but people can tell very quickly if the heart aligns with the action, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and you briefly alluded to it. I don't think we directly referred to it yet, but, you know, you've written a book called Giftology. So Giftology. And when I first heard about your book and then read it, it was refreshing to me to hear you talk about utilizing gifts in the business world from a perspective of generosity and not just from trying to buy influence. And or really, to be honest, my experience with gifts in the workplace, especially, and I can share some of the data we have from the five languages, is just they're largely stupid gifts that nobody wants, and people are going through the motions to do, you know, send a Christmas fruit basket or, you know, cheese stuff.
The worst.
That people don't want, or like you and I've talked, I mean, it's self-promoting. I mean, I was working with, I won't say the name of a well-known beverage company, that their managers actually were complaining to me that they just felt like they were walking billboards, right? I mean, they got all kinds of logo wear, some cool jackets and stuff like that, but it always had a logo on it, and they just felt like they were sort of, you know, being given to wear it to advertise, and so that didn't feel real good to them.
Yeah. What's funny is people in business, especially Western society, have confused what a gift is and what a promotional item is, or what swag is.
Okay.
A gift by its very nature is recipient focused. I mean, think about going to a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
You would never engrave, you know, compliments of giftology on the Tiffany's vase that you're going to give somebody, on the cup of knives that you're engraving. Like, that would be the cheesiest thing on the planet. Like, even for the most tacky person, they would never do that. But in business, you know, it's like, hey, you've worked here for, you know, 15 years, go pick out your gift.
Right.
And it's some cheap plaque or pen set that you can get at Walmart or Target. And then they put they have the audacity, you know, some crappy stuff from China, and they put the logo on it.
Right.
It's like, trying to turn somebody into a billboard is not a gift. It's, you're trying to manipulate that person into being a marketing tool for you. And that doesn't feel good, whether you're a janitor, whether you're an assistant, or whether you're the CEO. And people do, like, what people don't understand is everybody says business is all about relationships. Well, whether the relationships are personal relationships or business relationships,
yeah,
you're still dealing with human beings.
Right.
And human beings, whether personally or business-wise, it's still a human. They don't want to be manipulated, or they don't want to receive something that is all about the giver. If we all care about, like, what's in it for us and what's about, you know, what's my name? Is my name on it? No, it's a logo. Well,
right.
Then it's not really for me. And so my guess is that your data says most people don't want a gift in corporate America. And that's because it's not a gift. It's swag. It's promo. It's self-promotional.
Right.
And that doesn't feel very good.
Right. Yeah. And in fact, you know, of the 185,000 people who have taken our online inventory, and it's been consistent over 10 years now, 5-6% of employees are the ones that want tangible gifts as their primary language of appreciation. So that means, you know, 95% of people are saying, no, I don't want gifts. And it's the most frequent, least chosen language. And we've battled with that. And we've actually we continue to get feedback and change up items, because in our context, time off, or, you know, flex time or comp time after you worked hard on a project, that's a kind of benefit, a gift. It's not quality time in our languages. And so we've added more items about that because that's more desired by a lot of people. But even so, it's just like when you talk about gifts at work, the number of negative examples, I mean, I keep a list of just, I cannot believe some things that people have done. But to your point about business relationships versus personal relationships, if my printing supplier, my vendor, you know, who I have stuff printed, you know, for our marketing stuff or whatever, if they send us or even me a gift at Christmas, it's not from the, you know, the customer service person in that business. It's from the business, right? And I don't really have a relationship with the business. It's hard to have a relationship with a business. I mean, and so they're not available, you know. But anyway, and so I talk to people and say, you know, if we're going to do something, it's going to be person to person. It's somebody that you have a personal relationship with. It could be that you're a vendor or supplier to them, but it's not from your business to their business, because it just goes into the break room wherever all the hungry, you know, 20-something guys, you know, line up, snag it all. So I think there's a great confusion about it. And it's going to be interesting to see how we can change the culture and thinking about it, because right now there's just really a lot of negativity about gift giving in the workplace, either that it's stupid stuff or it's not personal, or it's the intent is manipulative. So how do you think we break through that? I mean, is it possible?
Yeah, well, I think that human nature is to do the least you can get away with. Most people in general don't raise to the occasion and say, and that's where something I saw in my mentor, Paul, like he would always ask himself, what's the most I can do here? Like, whether it's with a, you know, he'd walk into the pizza shop after a basketball game and see a bunch of people, and he just picked up the tab for the entire restaurant, and it was $800, and he didn't make any fanfare. He actually ducked out, so nobody saw him. He was just always doing the most that he could do. And I think that when you do that, it comes back tenfold. But most people don't naturally aren't bent that way. It's like when you're buying a gift, you know, you get invited to a wedding or a kid's graduation. Most guys, especially, will say, man, I haven't seen this nephew in like 5 years. Is this a $100 gift or $150? Like, what's the least I can get away with?
Here? Yeah.
That's just, and in business, we do that all the time. Like, what's the least we can get away with to give a gift here or do that? And what we don't realize is that, you know, it's a biblical concept. A gift ushers you before kings. It's Proverbs 18:16. Like, when you, like, kings would give other kings gifts of 1,000 head of cattle or, you know, like crazy things, because they realize that a gift, if it's done well, we don't call them gifts anymore, we call them artifacts. It should represent the value of the relationship. It's really just a delivery vehicle. And so I think if people, you know, they read Giftology or they hear me speak on stages, or they just, you know, realize that, like, if relationships really are their most valuable asset, then how we show gratitude and appreciation to those people communicates something, whether they're valuable or not. And we all know that people make decisions emotionally on if they're going to work the extra hour, are they going to care about whether or not there's waste in the company, are they going to care about, you know, working over a weekend? Like they make that emotional decision of, does that person care about me? And then they justify logically, well, yeah, they pay me well and da da da. But they kind of take for granted the 401k and the health benefits and a lot of the other things. Oftentimes what we see is that it's like going to a restaurant. And you might spend, you know, maybe it's your anniversary and you spend $300 at this really nice steakhouse with, you know, a nice bottle of wine, whatever else with you and your wife. If the waiter finds out that your wife likes a certain kind of chocolate and they make you they surprise you with a little chocolate cake at the end with this special chocolate, your wife is likely to tell 100 friends about that chocolate cake that probably cost the restaurant $2.
Right.
They're not going to brag about the bottle of wine and the steak. They kind of take all that for granted, even though that was $300. And so in business, oftentimes we kind of take for granted, like, the salary and the pay and some of the perks and benefits, but we'll brag. Like, one of the things we do for all of our employees is we pay to have all of their houses cleaned every other week, every employee. They can't take the cash. They can only take the perk. And I get $50,000 worth of value from that. Like, I never have to worry about hiring employees or anything, because it makes their life better, and it shows that we actually put our money where our mouth is and that we actually care about the employee to make their life better. So what I'd say is that if business leaders, CEOs, HR managers, VPs of sales and marketing, just the C-suite in general, or department heads would realize that the impact of doing this, I do think that there are pockets of people, companies that work with us, or companies out there that just do it because, you know, they feel led or they understand. But when you start to realize the power of treating people this way, I do think it's possible to get the tide to swing the other direction. And because I've seen people start to take the Giftology principles and apply them in their own ways, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. You know, what I've seen with our work with the five languages of appreciation is I tell people, yeah, okay, 6% of people choose GIFs as their primary language, and not a lot more choose it as their secondary language. But what we found is that if you use their primary language, whether that's words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, really the ones that we focus on, and then use it along with a gift, the gift becomes very meaningful. Because I've had a number of people say, you know, well, if I never hear anything positive, if they never stop by and see how I'm doing and checking in, or if I don't get any help when I'm, you know, working to try to finish a time deadline project, and I get this gift, it just doesn't feel very meaningful, feels superficial. And then if you add the fact of that everybody gets the same gift, I mean, we talk about how do you offend people in their primary language, and for people that value gifts, if you give everybody the same thing, because it is about the thought that counts in this case. I mean, you don't have to spend much. It's just you pay attention to get to know them, that they follow, you know, like I have a son-in-law who's a Pittsburgh Penguins fan. Well, if I get him a Boston Bruins thing, you know, it's just, you know, not going the right direction. And the same thing, I mean, and I lived in Atlanta, you know, you got Auburn and Alabama and the whole Iron Bowl thing. Or I had a friend of mine, he said, yeah, I thought my colleagues wanted to kill me because I'm a severe type 1 diabetic, and they gave me a box of candy for Christmas, you know, and it's just like, you know, let's,
you know, all the time.
Yeah, let's think about this a little bit. So we're trying to figure out, okay, given the data we have that people don't really value gifts, how do we re-educate them about the proper use of gifts and helpful way of using gifts in the workplace? And I think that's at least a first step for us, is to pair it with a language of appreciation that's important to them, and obviously make sure that it's personal. So I know you've done a fair amount of research into the kinds of characteristics that make gifts more meaningful and valued by people. Share a little bit about that with us.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things that, like, when somebody hires us to do gifting, that we will not do the gift unless they're followed certain core values and principles. One of them is, you may not be able to, if you're buying a gift for 1,000 people or 10,000 people, you might not be able to personalize every single item. But one thing that you can do no matter what is put their name on it. Uh-huh. And it seems like silly in 2019, like, oh, who cares? Just put the logo or leave it blank. Maybe they'll re-gift it. And I'm like, that's the worst. If they're re-gifting it, then that means, like,
right,
that they didn't like it, and you just spent money to communicate that they don't matter.
Right.
Like, that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when you know, like, I've seen even people, you know, millionaire, billionaire people, like, freak out when they see, their name on it, their family name. That turns it into personal to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we won't do in a lot of scenarios, even if it's for employees, is do the research to get their spouse's name. I can't tell you how many times where I've met a spouse at a company, and they come up to me and say, John, like, this is the first time in 25 years that I ever was included in the gift.
Mm.
And they made me, like, they're crying. And I'm like, you probably make like 150 grand a year. Like, you could have afforded those knives, or
right,
the,
right,
you know, the weather goods or whatever. It's not that it wasn't the dollar amount, although, like, we do say, like, it should be best in class or world class. That's another principle. But the fact of including the inner circle, and we define the inner circle as being the spouse, the assistant, if it's a business type gift,
mm-hmm,
the kids and the pets. Like, those are the people around them that oftentimes get the worst side of being in business or working for a company. You know, like, the average employee's working 2,000 hours. That's 2,000 hours away from their family.
Right.
And, you know, oftentimes it's, you know, maybe missing a kid's Little League game or whatever. And so anytime you can honor the people around them and include them in the gift, I mean, you talk about brownie points and a home run.
Yeah.
I mean, it just goes through the roof. The other thing that you mentioned, hybrid or kind of combining, I won't send a single gift out unless there's a handwritten note that goes with it.
Hmm.
And to me, the handwritten note is actually just as important, if not more important than, you know, the item that's going out. And we do really nice gifts that are, you know, custom engraved, whatever, knives and what have you, that are hundreds or thousands of dollars. But I won't send it out unless the handwritten note, because the note is what makes it personal to them and communicates the value and why they sent the gift and all of that sort of thing. And so if you can't put a handwritten note with it, like, oh, just type it. And
yeah.
I'm like, no.
Right.
That in 2019, the handwritten note is probably more important now than it was even 30 years ago,
mm-hmm,
because it's so rare. So, well, I think people will say, like, well, I've done the gifting thing, but they haven't followed your principles of the combining the things, and they haven't followed what we call the recipe. Like they're just like saying, well, we made bread, but we decided to not put yeast in it. Right. And I'm like, well, then you didn't make bread.
Right.
You think you have to follow certain things in order for the gift to land in any sort of way.
Yeah. And interesting about the name issue, we teach, or I teach a fairly simple model of giving an effective compliment or word of praise. And the first part is to use a person's name, because we like to hear our name. And then secondly, to be very specific about what it is that you value or appreciate versus just, glad you're part of the team or something like that. And then third, why whatever you value and appreciate is important, whether it's important to you, to your company, to the customer. But a key part of that with the name is you better make sure you spell the name right. And that sounds sort of stupid, but there are a lot of ways to spell Amy and, almost any name, Bob, B-A-U-B, not really, but, it feels like that. And
John, you can spell the name. Yeah, one letter makes all the difference.
Yeah, and it's sort of like, you wouldn't believe the number of people that just absolutely sort of almost yell at me, say, yes, because Danielle, it's got two L's or one L or an E, any kind of thing. And so you think but it's important to make sure. So,
yeah. Well, a lot of people will avoid doing names because they're afraid of misspelling somebody's name.
Yeah.
So I would just leave the names off it. And I'm like, you realize how you're lessening the impact by like 90%.
Yeah.
And they're like, come on, it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, it shows whether it was grabbed out of the closet of a bunch of stuff versus it was made for that person.
Mm-hmm.
And, take the risk. If you're engraved something on 1,000 pieces, even if you get one wrong, we'll triple down and then we'll make the gift 3 times better, when we fix it. And the other 999 people are blown away that you took the time to personalize with their name. And it seems like a silly concept, but it is so powerful. I mean, it's how God's wired us. It's our DNA. Like, our name is massively important. I mean, my little daughter, it's so funny. If I call her anything other than her name, Sailor, she gets so mad. Mm. She's like, I'm Sailor. And, she's 3 years old. Like, it's wired into us. Our name is our identity. And to not tap into that, how God's wired us when you're doing gifts of any sort is way underutilizing the impact. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's important here to distinguish between a gift and a reward for performance, because that is so misunderstood in our culture. Employee recognition programs are prolific. I mean, their research shows at least 90% of all the companies and organizations in the U.S. and Northern America have some form of employee recognition. And, at the same time, even recently, it's been shown that job satisfaction and employee engagement have gone down in the midst of all of those programs being born and implemented. And partly it's because companies and leaders have tried to use recognition and rewards for a purpose they weren't designed for. As I researched and looked at it, because I'm like, I'm a psychologist and I don't know about, HR stuff that much, and sort of came in the side door and started looking at it. And I would tell my friends that were in the field, I said, this reward recognition stuff isn't working. They say, yeah, but we don't know what else to do. Initially, it was to specifically define certain behaviors or goals that you wanted to reach and, call attention to that and potentially tangibly reward it. And when it's designed well and implemented well and consistently, those things can happen. I mean, you want people to fill out the paperwork and get it turned in, or you want your receptionist to answer the phone, politely and cheerfully, whatever the behavior is. But being rewarded for performance is not the same as being appreciated as a person. And we try to really differentiate that we're not just work units, we're not just production units. And so appreciation goes beyond that. And the other important point is that it's well known that only about 10 to 15% of a workforce gets recognized and rewarded for performance. And it's usually the same people year after year. So if you take the top 15% off, and we'll leave out the lowest, and you got a big group of 50 to 60% of your workforce that's in the middle. They're good people. They're working hard. They're doing their best. They may not be your stars, but they're solid. If they don't get recognized for performance, they don't hear anything, right? And so that's where we feel like appreciation really sort of fills in the gaps there, that it's not always about performance. It's sometimes that somebody's, you know, it's just they're cheerful and they've got a fun laugh. And it's just like, man, I love to hear you laugh. It just sort of lights up the room, you know, or that it's something outside of work because we happen to be people besides just, you know, work units. And so if somebody's training for a half marathon or so, I can say, man, you know, Susan, that is so cool. You've got the discipline to do that, you know, and I'm just not there now. And I think that's cool. And so it doesn't have to be about work and rewards. And I got to think in your work with Giftology, there's some similarities, right? As far as,
yeah,
tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I tell people all the time, like it's a lot of the two most powerful times to send a gift are out of the blue, just because, and if somebody gives you a little bit of their time, whether it's a client, a vendor, an employee, doesn't matter. Like as a human being, like time is one of our most valuable assets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, frankly, if an employee is working for you, they're probably giving you 2,000 hours or more of their time. And what's interesting to me, and when it does show up out of the blue, it's not, you're not giving a gift because you had to, because mm-hmm. of an incentive or a reward, or because they worked there for 20 years. You do it just because.
Mm-hmm.
It blows people away because they're like, they're so not expecting it. Mm-hmm. And whether you're, you know, an entry-level employee, like for my interns, like I send, you know, $200-$300 headphones saying, hey, like, appreciate what you've done. I hope these block out the noise so you can study for finals. And people are like, oh, that's so wasteful. And I'm like, $300 to attract the best talent back to my company is the best money I'll ever spend.
Right.
And, you know, most people will give gifts when somebody's leaving the company. I'm like, why wouldn't you celebrate them when they start and put them off on the right foot? Like, I'll spend $300 to start a company and employee off on the right foot. People are like, oh, it's so much money. And I'm like, really? Compared to everything else where companies, I own a business. I know where you can waste money.
Right.
There's a lot of wasted money out there. And what people don't do is they don't budget the just because gift. They don't budget the I'm starting, and they don't realize that those are where you can invest a dollar and get 100x return, because no other company on the planet is celebrating people just for being a human being and being a part of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a really powerful thing. And whether that's with, like you said, words of affirmation or whether that's with a tangible gift, like we all crave that acknowledgement. And like you said, 15% of the people are getting it. So yeah, most of the gifting, tangible gifting that we do, it's not tied to rewards and incentives. It might be company wide,
mm-hmm.
but it's tied to, hey, thanks for being, you know, just thanks for being you,
mm-hmm.
and thanks for your partnership, and thanks for being on the team. And you know, there's a lot of people that are, a lot of tears shed, good happy tears, like, wow, this is the first company that's ever done this for me.
Right.
Like, they didn't tie it to, hey, we made $1 million last year. Like, they just tied it to me being a human.
Yeah,
and it's pretty powerful.
So. It's interesting to hear you talk about that, because as I'm learning and understanding more about your approach, there are things that are parallel to the five languages of appreciation. And one of the things that we hear, and in fact, the number one reason people cite that they don't show appreciation or they don't believe appreciation shown, is that feel like they're too busy, right? And which is true. And it's like, people are busy. Nobody's sitting around waiting to find out more stuff to do unless they're a graveyard security guard or something like that. But now one of the things we've found, and as a psychologist, I'm supposed to be a specialist in helping behavior change both individually and groups. And so we know that when we want to change habits and behaviors, there are obstacles and challenges. And so we have to identify those and figure out how to get past those. Well, one of the things we found is that largely with appreciation, you don't have to really do much different. Maybe you're tweaking it just a little bit, but mainly you're doing the right action for the right person, right? So that you're only sending an encouraging email to the people that want an email. You're only stopping by and checking into those people that value time and so on. And so as I hear you describe about sort of the just because gifts, sounds like it would take some time and energy and investment that could be a barrier for people to implement it. Tell me about that and how you guys approach that.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, like your business or any business, like most companies that we see that do it really well. They either have people dedicated, they have, you know, what we call like a generosity manager on their team, that their whole focus is just to figure out how to love on people.
Wow.
Or they outsource it to somebody that it can help facilitate, because it is difficult to handwrite, you know, hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of notes, or it is difficult to personalize and engrave and do different things. And so I think, you know, it's like anything else. Like, it's, if you just put it, add it to a task list for a manager just to have to do all on their own, and they don't have resources and training and understanding about it, like,
right,
then we're going to fall on our face. I mean, there's a reason that the five love languages was written, mm-hmm, 30, 40 years ago. Like, we struggle with it in our marriages. We struggle with it in all interpersonal relationships,
right,
because we're just not aware. And, you know, the power of your book is it brings awareness to people and says, oh, wow, this is a big deal. And this is kind of the roadmap of how to do that. And so I think when you have a roadmap, you have some training, you have some tools, you have some resources to be able to do it. What's interesting is when you start to do it and you see people light up, you know, in a company, it becomes addictive. Like, it's exciting for most people. It's exciting to see somebody else, you know, like, light up and
yeah,
feel joy and feel gratefulness and, you know, well up with tears. Like, that's kind of one of the most powerful things for another human, is to be able to connect with another person and be able to feel like you made somebody's day, week, month, year, life.
Right.
And I think
that's a great principle, because getting that immediate reward is important. And in our work with groups, you can get overwhelmed thinking about, you know, sort of all the implications and permutations of how this could grow out. And you just say, oh, man, I don't know if I can handle that. And then you shut down. And I just tell people, okay, here's the deal. You need to start somewhere with someone. Okay, you don't have to implement it across the whole board, you know, with everybody all at once. But if you don't start somewhere with someone, the likelihood of you ever doing it goes way down. And I could, you know, throw out a made up statistic, but we know that you've got to take a first step. And then what the cool thing about the first step is that you see the benefits and the cool results, and that reinforces and motivates you to say, hey, I want to see that again for my other team members. And so I think that's a key part, because there are people, you know, I'm not one of these where you got to sort of plan everything out and have it all sort of in place before you start. There's clearly a role for that, but it also can become an impediment for ever doing anything. We sort of work by an 80% rule, like, hey, if I'm going to take a test, I want to at least get a B, okay? If I can get an A, you know, that's great. But we're going to start with a B just to get started. But we're eventually going to get to the A, because we're going to learn from it and keep going. But if I have to perfect it from the beginning, it's not likely going to happen. So we always try to take a step and get going. So I think that's a cool thing to look for and say, okay, let's start this maybe with just a small few intergroup or whatever, and watch for, you know, their reactions and the benefits, and then go from there.
Yeah, get the 1.0 version going. Minimum viable product. I mean, you got to start walking or crawling even before you run. And yeah, most people aren't going to start as a sprint. That's just not how life works. So
right,
it's even when we're working with them, we're like, hey, let's get a few wins on the board, a few base hits, and then we'll start going for the grand slams. Once there's a foundation in place.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting. We've been able to do some research with the people who have taken the Motivating by Appreciation inventory, and we actually looked at everybody's taken it and to see if there was a difference across different demographic variables that we are able to collect, to see if, you know, men versus women, different age groups, different kinds of industries prefer gifts more or less than others. And what we found is that there's really no predictable demographic. I mean, men and women, it doesn't matter which gender you are, or even age group. Sometimes you wonder, you know, you hear about millennials not liking stuff. They don't like or dislike gifts any more than older employees. But what we're going to start now and going to pull in information from your work of, it's probably more about the type of gift or how it was given, when and so forth, that if we can improve the quality of the gift and the process, which I know you really focus on a lot, it's not as much about the gift as it is the process. If we can make the process healthier and more meaningful, then I think we'll start to see some differences in whether or not people would like those kind of gifts, right?
Yeah, no question. I think, I mean, we see it even with doing events. People are like, oh, we don't do gifts, we do experiences. And I'm like, well, that's awesome. I said, it's not one or the other. It's both and. And if you do all those things well, the gift becomes the tangible trigger and reminder. Mm-hmm. That's what we tell people with companies. Like, if you give something that they take home and use with their family every day for the next 20 years, every time they use that item, there's that tangible reminder of the love, the appreciation, the emotion that was tied to that. And so I think if you're able to start this, I mean, that's the reason we changed the word gift. The gift kind of just feels like blah, and it could be mean 100 different things. But when you use the word artifact, people are like, well, what do you mean by artifact? I'm like, well, you think about what are the things that you would grab from your house if their house was on fire? It wouldn't necessarily be the most expensive things. It'd be the things that had meaning, that were personalized to you, that you know, like I think of the story. One of my clients is Joey Coleman. He speaks all over the world on how to never lose a customer. And he used to be an attorney, and he had an estate. The patriarch passed away and left $5 million to his three kids. And they fought over one item for 3 years and drained the $5 million of the estate. And people are like, was it artwork? What is whatever? And no, it was a $20 harmonica that the dad played every day after dinner for 40 years.
Right.
And they all, when they thought of the dad, they thought of that harmonica. So I think we all have room in our lives for, you know, like an artifact. We don't need, as Americans, we don't need more stuff. I mean, the book Essentialism and all these other things, like in the Marie, whatever her name is, tidying up, like is taking over, because most people have so much stuff in their office and so much stuff at their house. They're like, you know, there's 50 million storage units just bursting at the seams with stuff.
Right.
But we all have room for that special artifact. And whether it came from, you know, your manager, whether it came from the CEO or whether it came from your spouse, like,
well, that's why
it came from a human being.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, we, as kids or even adults, we want to buy the Donald Duck snow globe and take it home from Disneyland. It's not the snow globe. It's that it reminds us of the trip, right? And how much fun we had.
No question.
And man, we have lost, I think, the understanding of the meaning of gifts, that it's not always about the value, monetary value of the thing. It's a symbol often of either a memory, a shared experience, or the time and effort it went into making it. I mean, you know, my dad and my family, except for me, are all good woodworkers, and they would make things. And it wasn't, I mean, it's a cool thing, but it's, man, they thought about it and they designed it and they sanded it like crazy, you know, and it was the time and effort and thought put into it. And so if we can focus on that versus the monetary aspect, and I, in our work, you know, it's not about big stuff. I mean, it's bringing in somebody's favorite Starbucks in the fall if they like the pumpkin spice thing, or, you know, it's that you're getting to know them as a person. And I think that theme really sort of carries through. And I appreciate you saying that, you know, sometimes clearly time is our most valuable asset, and that if you as a person, as a leader, can think about this for at least a small group of your team members or customers or vendors, that's great. But to take it on, you're going to have to delegate it, and either internally within your organization or, you know, externally to somebody that does that. But it's a priority. It becomes part of your business plan, in essence, to be able to show gratitude and appreciation to people that really is going to set you apart from the competition. I mean, it reminds me of Patrick Lencioni's book on The Advantage. It sort of ties into that. It really makes you different than your competitors and gives you an advantage business-wise that's going to play out over time.
Yeah, no question. We call it a loyalty action plan. If you want real loyalty where people are actively filling seats on your bus or actively sending you referrals, you know, if you don't have that, you have a loyalty problem. And if you don't have a plan for something, it's probably going to fail because you don't even you don't have, you don't have budget, you don't have anything intention behind it. And, you know, you have a marketing plan, you have a, a finance plan, you have, operations plan, like having a loyalty plan, and, is really powerful. And we take all of our clients through that. Like they're like their eyes, they're like, oh my gosh, they get really big. They're like, wow, this could be really powerful to start loving on our relationships. Like they matter. And thinking about it strategically, not, once a year at the holidays, but like, when you say please and thank you, like you teach your kids to say it every day, right? Like in business, it should be the same thing. You say please and thank you every day, whether it's internally or externally, but most people don't have a plan for that. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Well, we're towards the end here, and I want to just maybe ask you, for those who are listening that, this is sort of new stuff and thought-provoking, and I want to pursue it. One, tell about where they can get your book, but also just maybe one or two initial steps that you would encourage people to start moving towards to help them, sort of understand or implement this in some of their business relationships.
Yeah. Well, one thing I wouldn't be a giftologist if I didn't give some sort of gift. We take all of our clients through a white paper on the 10 worst gifts to avoid giving.
I got to tell you this. You won't believe this one. Yeah. A group that we trained, I said, what's the worst gift? And they told me that the company that they worked for wasn't the current company we were working with, but they said that they gave them last year's calendars.
I'm gonna have to add onto the top 10 and add a number 11.
What are you thinking? So anyway, I knew that. Yeah. That's up there. So anyway.
That's on there. Gift cards are on there. Food is on there. And people are like, why is food not good? I'm like, well, you're only getting one impression from it oftentimes. And oftentimes you don't know if people are on a diet. You don't know if they're gluten intolerant. I mean, there's so many diets and fads. So we put the top 10 list together. So people could, at least if they were executing on their own, they could at least avoid some of the hot topics that in what most companies, when they look at the list, they're like, oh my gosh, that's my entire playbook. I give every one of those things.
Yeah. Cool.
But if they want to, they can go, your tribe can go download that at thegiversedge.com. It's free. They can show it to their team, their assistant, their HR team, whoever. But it's powerful to have some sort of boundaries and to start kind of getting the creative juices of what makes a good gift and what's not a great gift and why. The other thing I would just say is there's a thing called the gratitude journal or the 5-minute journal. And it's really, the idea is if you would start writing down every day, three relationships that you're grateful for. And you start to think about all the people that believe in you, mentors, advisors, clients, employees, past team members, investors. Like if you did that, for a year, you'd have 1,000 people to say thank you to. Mm-hmm. But you start with three.
Right.
And if you would just start with those three per day, and then maybe you say once a week, I'm gonna write, one handwritten note to those people, or I'm gonna buy one gift, or I'm gonna whatever. But like you said, I call it the gratitude muscle. You got to start working that gratitude muscle. And people are like, oh, John, you just must be really talented at this gifting thing. That's you're just born with it. And I'm like, I'm a farm boy with milk and goats, in Ohio. Like I wasn't born with this. I just worked the gratitude muscle for 19 years with our clients. And because of that, you put time, energy, and attention towards something, you get pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And, but you got to start small. And I would just say, taking care of home first, taking care of your spouse, and loving them well. Like, that's your number one team member.
Right.
If things aren't good there, then really the rest of your employees, whatever else, like, they're important, but they're not going to matter. But you start small, you start consistent. Something like the 5-Minute Journal is a great guidebook. There's another one that a buddy of mine, Ben Greenfield, wrote, put together called the Christian Gratitude Journal. But somewhere, right in the journal, those three things are in people that you're grateful for. And then from there you may decide, hey, I want to take this a step further and, check out the book or whatever else. But that's a great starting point.
Cool. So, and the website's thegiversedge.com, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Cool. Good. Thanks so much. Well, John, thanks. This has flown by for me. I've enjoyed it and I always enjoy chatting with you, and I'm looking forward to continue to grow personally and professionally in this, but also figuring out how we can really work together to change the giving culture within the workplace, at least in North America, and make a difference. Because, you know, obviously it's in the nature of God deeply to be a giver. I mean, that's just at the heart of who he is. And so if we can grow in that, that's good for all of us. So thanks so much for your time and sharing your thoughts and wisdom.
So. Hey, Paul, thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
All right, cool. All right, well, you have a good rest of the day, and I'll be in touch, okay?
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, well, I hope you all enjoyed that discussion between John Ruhlin, spelled R-U-H-L-I-N, and I. This is Dr. Paul White, the co-author of The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. And I hope you've enjoyed this version of Making Work Relationships Work. And have a great rest of the day.